let's go down and have everyone spend 10-15 seconds introducing himself or herself, and then I'll try to get the session started without waiting. Okay, let's go down the list as we have them on the attendee list. So, Matt, go ahead.
My name is Matt Semminger. I am the owner and CEO of The Pay Consulting. What we do is systems architecture at a very complex level, for example, enterprises, and I'm on this session so I can learn more about the OOR, and because we're doing similar things, and we are looking to maybe federate with it and see if what kind of functionality we can integrate with the OOR.
Okay. I'm Peter Yim. I'm one of the three co-conveners of Ontolog Forum that sort of provides the platform for this collaboration. And then I also had joined Mike Dean and Leo Obers in having started the OOR initiative a couple of years ago. So, Misha?
I'm Misha Dorf. From Stanford. I'm the Chief Software Architect of Stanford, and I primarily work on the original BAP portal.
Thanks, Misha. Jim?
Hi, I'm Jim Strategy. I'm from BDN Technologies, and the last few weeks I've been doing an experiment with Federation using the sandbox as the source server. And I'm on the call today to brief what we've accomplished so far.
Thanks, Jim. Jack?
I'm Jack Park. I'm playing PhD student at the Open University in the UK. I live in Mountain View, California. And I'm working on knowledge federation, but possibly with a slightly different slant than that term is being used here.
Thanks, Jack. David?
David Eddy in Boston. I'm coming at this from a commercial viewpoint. I had a ringside seat with the collapse, the total collapse of the repository market in the late 1980s and early 1990s. One of the missing components in that market for over 40 years was language control. And I'm interested in how this moves forward.
Thank you, David. Michelle?
Michelle Raymond. I was 13 years with Honeywell Labs, and I'm just starting out as an independent consultant, self-employed. I'm working in the areas of open source and exchange for emergency response. We're also looking at energy and other domains and the building service performance within OnSpot. Across my domains, but the areas that I'm currently looking at for open information exchange and repository would be disaster management exercises for emergency response and their counterparts in energy.
And just for people's information, Michelle was the content champion when we discussed Open Ontology Repository back in at the Ontology Summit 2008. So, Doug?
I'm Doug Fosberg. I was 7 years at Cycle as an ontological architect there. I'm now at Dairy, working on semantic web and ontologies for that. I've also been participating in the Ontolog Forum.
Thank you. Alex?
So, hi, this is Alex Garcia. I am working at the University of Bremen, Germany, and I am currently leading the effort of having an ontology repository for assistive technology. So, yes.
Thank you, Alex. Lynn?
Jim Disbrough?
No, Lynn, push out.
My name is Lin Pusha. I'm a computer scientist at the Oak Ridge National Lab, and in one of my projects, I have been working with environmental science and in particular earth and climate data, and with and this project, I'm part of a data one, and one of the interests would be to partly create an ontology repository for earth science data. And Jim just sent me to a very interesting link to ET.gov, so I'll be looking at that.
Cool.
Bart Vidovich.
Hi, everyone. My name is Bart Vidovich. I'm a graduate student at the Computer Science Department at Ryerson University in Toronto. As part of my thesis on ontology matching, I'm currently working on a module to perform ontology matching on the OR platform. I'm also in the process of installing an instance of it locally at the university.
Great. Jim Disbro?
My name is Jim Disbro. I'm the program manager for website et.gov and for emergingtechnologies.gov. There's one component that I posted at the very beginning of this conference call in the room, leading me through the process of what we're trying to do in terms of building a case study focused on a critical tipping point, which is the energy-water mixture vis-a-vis the climate. And you know, we've got all kinds of different parts that are ongoing, and I've actually got traction in a bunch of places, which is really good to see. And I encourage other people, listening, for example, to join in with us to help us make this work, because this open ontology repository is actually where the end product of what we're doing on this case study is going to wind up as a case study, and it will also be an ontology, I hope, that deals with all of these three of these issues, energy, water, and climate.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Did someone just join?
Hi, this is Mike Dean.
Oh, hi, Mike.
Sorry, I thought it was a noon start today as well.
Right, right. Everybody, I mean, half the team thought so, too. So you're not the only one. So I'm glad you joined. We are just going down the list of attendees. We're just coming to Mike Gruninger now. So,
have we done presentations yet?
No. We'll start right after this.
Okay, great. Again, my apologies.
No problem. Michael?
Hey, Michael Gruninger here, professor at Mechanical Industrial Engineering at the University of Toronto. I've been working in Ontolog for quite a few years now, and I'll be talking a little bit later on today about our Common Logic Ontology Depository project and trying to coordinate that with OOR.
Great. Terry? Terry?
This is Terry Longstreth. I'm retired from IBM and from Lockheed Martin. I've been involved in data dictionary and database work since the 1960s. I'm trying to keep up with the field and trying to be useful.
Natasha?
Hi, I'm Natasha Noy. I'm a researcher at Stanford, and so I work on the National Center for Biomedical Ontologies and on BioPortal, mostly on the requirements and design side, and I'm also a member of the Protégé group.
Thank you, Natasha. Jim Ryan?
Hi, I'm Jim Ryan. I'm an independent consultant specializing in commercial business architectures. I'm actually looking to put together an ontology-based modeling platform for doing business information architectures.
Thanks, Jim. And it looks like you have a few colleagues that share that same passion around here. So, Paul Alexander.
Yeah, Paul Alexander. I work at NCBO at Stanford with Misha and Natasha, and primarily do development on the BioPortal user interface and some of the BioPortal core as well.
Thank you. Ali Hashemi. Yes, please. Sorry.
Yes. So I'm Ali Hashemi. I used to work with Michael Grin here in Toronto. Right now I'm involved in a couple of projects specifically on oncolytic viruses. and developing a knowledge system to support that, and another one is for urban farming. I've been following Ontolog for a while, and I'm interested in the developments in OOR. I had a big part in helping bring about Colore, the Common Logic Ontology repository.
Fantastic. Thank you, Ali. Ravi or Lin? Lin Zhang? Ravi Shang? No? If not, then I'll turn this over to Mike, who can start by introducing himself and introduce this session and start from there. So all yours, Mike.
Great. I'm delighted to see all the participants on this telecon, and I apologize again for my confusion over the start time. I work for BDN Technology. I've been involved in the Semantic Web since about 2000, and was one of the co-conveners of OOR. So I'm delighted to see how this community has evolved. So why don't we go ahead and I'll kick off this session and get to the interesting talks from our panel. So let's see, moving to slide two in my deck. Basically, the motivation for this panel is that we've had a fair amount of OOR-specific development and deployment. And we thought that this would be a good time to revisit some of these questions from a year or so ago, particularly related to software configuration management and so forth. So that's the basic motivation there. So let's see. Moving to slide three, there's several efforts that we're aware of that we'll be presenting to today with involving deep development in OOR. So the my colleagues Jim Chattagny and Dan Sears have been working on federation of OOR instances of the work at Toronto on Colore for supporting common logic, and the great work that Ken DeBlock and his students have been working on for gatekeeping in Providence. Like I said, each of those groups will be presenting in a moment here. Moving to slide four, we also have a number of new instances of OOR deployment. So we've gone to sort of a second sandbox implementation for itself. Jim has installed a couple instances at BDN. Particularly been supporting a lot of the sandbox work. They have created help from the Wire Portal developers to answer questions and so forth. And Bart, I think that you've actually installed a version recently at Ryerson as well.
I'm in the hospital, yeah.
Good. So, I think we're actually learning a lot about simplifying the information process and refining it as you do this. I think that's been a really useful and productive step. It's a nice amount of traffic on the OOR dev list related to that. Let's move to slide five. It's the agenda. After this discussion, we'll have three talks on just development activities from Jim, Michael, and Ken. Natasha, I asked to talk about upcoming plans for Wire Portal, and we have a sense of what's coming and leverage these activities and so forth. There was a little discussion earlier about reordering some of the talks, but Natasha, if you're on, I assume that that's not a problem at this point.
Yeah, I'm on. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So we actually open it into a more general software discussion among the whole group, particularly how we want to manage software going forward, making use of the OOR project that's somewhat central in addition to the new version on the Wire Portal project.
and then basically some question and answer and a bit more general discussion at the end. And I think I'll go ahead and present my the main slide I had in terms of one thing I had to follow up with is just a list of upcoming events. So I'm going to go ahead and present that now. This is slide 6. If we'll have a regular ORT telecon 2 weeks from now on March 5th, the Oncology Summit, which a lot of us have been involved in, will be having their symposium at NIST on the 15th and 16th. I assume that we will have it on our telecom that week as well. And then we have a couple upcoming panels, really two that are, I think, have firm dates at this point, and one to schedule. One focusing on OR content, how we can actually get more oncology into the repository and what types of oncology we strictly want to actively source and recruit. That Ted Cassidy is helping to organize. And one on OR use cases that is from Denise Bedford is also helping with the OR content. And Ken is going to be one of these cases. And then we, at our last telecon, we decided it would be a good opportunity to have a panel on IPR issues. And Peter Yim is coordinating that and looking for another picture.
With that, I guess I would like to turn the podium over to Jim.
Okay, your slides are up.
Okay, let's go to slide 2, OR Federation Overview. So, basically, what we mean by federation for this discussion is the ability to have multiple OR instances such that when someone uploads a new ontology and its metadata to one instance, other instances can automatically copy that information to make it available for users that typically log in to that other instance. And so it's a one-way ability to distribute automatically among instances the ontologies and the views that people have uploaded. And it turns out that in the BioPorto core, there is a service called OBO Pull, which runs periodically, like every day, and goes out to the OBO foundry and automatically does a CBS or a subversion checkout of all the information that's there and brings it back to the server and puts it into the system just because someone had uploaded it back in. And so I use that as a model to integrate this other federation capability and basically implemented it in a way that's patterned almost exactly the way OBO Pull is done. So the federation is implemented as a service that runs within the core, and it is invoked periodically by the core scheduler. I run it at intervals of every 5 minutes, every hour, every 4 hours, and so forth. And what it does is it has a configuration file that lists all of the OR instances that it's supposed to federate from, and those give the URL of the RESTful services of the remote instance. And so over the web, the service makes HTTP requests to the remote instance using these RESTful services, parses the XML that is returned, and uses that to decide how to synchronize the information that's stored locally. And when it does the synchronization locally, it uses the BioPorto Core's ontology service, which is all set up through the Spring framework and so forth, which allows the Federation service to create instances of the remote ontology locally and update them in the database and so forth. And when it does the Federation, for now at least, it does not federate remote ontologies that themselves have already been federated from another instance. So that's something that we're thinking about in terms of whether that would be a good thing to do or not. But right now, it simply ignores any OOR ontologies that achieve remotely that are marked as having already been federated there from another host. So if we had, we can talk about that later. So this initial version just supports ontologies and their views. For those that are not really familiar with the metadata model in OOR, what that means is that each ontology is basically has a set of metadata that people enter when they upload the ontology in addition to the actual file that contains the ontology definition. And then with that web application, you can create what are called views on the ontology, which are themselves packages metadata about the ontology, but you could have an alternate file, for example, that's not in the ontology. So you may have an ontology and a view on that where the underlying ontology definition might be in a different language that, or something like that. So there are really those two aspects to each of the ontologies that get federated. There's other elements associated with an ontology or other aspects associated with an ontology in the system, like the mappings that one can create from one ontology to another's properties, or the users defined in the system, or projects defined in the system, and so forth. And so all of those additional aspects are also candidates to be included in federation. I didn't bother to attempt to include in federation any of the other aspects that were not already available in the core as RESTful services, because I think that probably is the path that we would want to take, or at least I would recommend that we take that path. So it would be possible to have local representations of all the users that exist remotely so that they could be associated with their ontologies and so forth. But I think there are some issues there potentially about unique global identifiers and things like that, because basically the way the system works, everything is done by auto-incremented database ID. And I think we'd want to think a little bit more about how we would know that this particular username that multiple hosts really represents the same person and that sort of thing. And then on the slide here, finally, there's just some information about which versions of file for the core user interface and the admin application that we started with. We imported those into all local computers into the repository and then overlaid our changes onto those particular versions. That might be something that would help in the discussion later when we talk about configuration management issues. So if there's no questions at this point, I'll go to the next slide, which is our OOR server federated with the SIM3 OOR sandbox. This is just a screenshot of our instance showing the ontology listing. And you can see that there are three ontologies that have been federated. I modified the user interface just to note that they were federated in their name for now. And on the next slide, federated ontology example, this is the Cosmo ontology. So this information that we're looking at on this screenshot in our system is automatically pulled into our system from the SIM3 sandbox. And because of the federated ontology, I modified the display slightly to just include another column, or another row, rather, that gives the user access to a link to the actual system where the original ontology is. Also, typically at this stage in the application, if you are logged into the application and you were the one that uploaded this ontology, there would be other links on this page that allow you to create, well, to edit the information to create a new version of the apology, or if you click on the view panel to create a new view and so forth. All of that has been disallowed within our version of the application, so that basically federated apologies are essentially reading in the local system. And that's because the federation is one way. If changes were made locally, there'd be no way to feed that back to the original system. But the idea would be that you could go to the original system by clicking on the federate link and make the changes there, and the next time that the federation runs, those changes would be updated locally. So the next slide says all versions of ontologies and views are supported. There's a little bit of a complication in the sense that as people modify previously uploaded metadata information, new versions are created. And then typically there can be several versions of an ontology and several versions of views on a particular version of an ontology. And I decided that for completeness it would be best to actually have the Federation service support all of those versions so that it doesn't just bring down the latest version and synchronize the latest version, but all versions that exist that really more hope. So this just a little screenshot showing that indeed these federated ontologies actually do have their versions locally. I just created these dummy little BBMIs artifacts here myself on one of the instances that I had set up so that I could test this sort of thing without actually making changes on the OR sandbox itself. And then the next slide says Federation is also available via the admin app. Just for completeness, I went ahead and added to the BioPortal admin application another little link here that allows you to invoke the Federation service just as if it were, and it basically does the same thing as if it was invoked through the schedule. Okay, and then the next slide, doing the implementation a little bit for those that are familiar with the software, I just wanted to give a kind of a brief introduction to how we did this. Essentially, we added a new template for the OAuth Federation configuration. Very simple little XML document that has an entry for each remote host that you want to federate from. There's an argument as to whether or not you want that to be active currently. There's the URL for the RESTful services, port number, and a name for it. The idea with the configuration is that if you remove a host, well, I guess I'll talk about that later, but the idea is that basically every time the service runs, it looks at this configuration and it follows what those declarations are in terms of the decisions it makes about how to synchronize locally. And then in the build-out properties file, we added the port scheduling argument and the resource path for that particular configuration resource. And I went ahead and extended the sort of core OWL metadata model just to add a couple more properties. The federated URL property is the URL for the remote RESTful services, and the federated ID is the remote ID. I'm starting to use the term here, ontology being, but for those of you not familiar with the architecture, it's based largely on the Spring framework, and the Java classes represent these packets of information. They're called ontology being is the one that we make the most use of, which is a Java object that basically represents within the service a particular version of an ontology or an ontology view. And so everything is implemented in terms of data. So because I had to add a couple properties to the underlying model that represents basically the ontology in the system, I went into the other portions of the software, both on the core side and on the user interface side, which is based on Ruby, and had to add a few fields to different class definitions and wrappers and things like that. So everything was happy. And also made the code so that if you use this on a system that has, for example, if you wanted to implement federation on the sandbox, you wouldn't have to go in and actually modify the database or anything like that. It would automatically begin to put non-null values into the database for these properties when the federation was actually beginning and things were starting to run. So it wouldn't break the system. So I had to put a few tests in there to make sure that if things were null, that you couldn't upset any of the software. And so the federation implementation itself is using the system as a service, again, like the OVO full capability and the other services that are in the system. And I built a little request so that this could be invoked through the Pro admin application as well. And as I mentioned before, I made a few changes in user interface. We did see the indications of whether an ontology is federated and to restrict the user from making any changes to it. And as I said before, also added it to the admin web application. So the next slide talks a little bit about how the federation service works from an operational standpoint. As I mentioned, state is represented as these ontology beams. And so we have sets of these beams that represent all the versions of the ontology and all the versions that are used on each of those versions. And there's a set of beams that represent when the federation service runs, it takes a snapshot, basically, of everything that's in the system locally. And then for each of the remote hosts that are deployed in this configuration, it takes a snapshot of all the beams that exist remotely. And then it goes into this loop, basically operating within the context of each remote host and synchronizes the local copies with what it's found when it queries the remote system. And so the first thing it does is it says, well, if I have local copies of ontologies that were pulled from a remote host that's no longer in my configuration at all, then it just that's how you can erase previously federated things when you change your mind about who you want to federate from. Or if there's a local copy that no longer exists remotely, then, you know, it's deleted itself. And then there are certain fields or certain user-editable fields located in ontology that one can modify through the application. They really don't result in a new version, but, for example, if you modify, I believe, something like the description, it doesn't necessarily result in a new version, it just modifies that. Anyway, there are a few property types out there. Those also get checked and updated locally if differences are found. And then finally, any new versions, any new, entirely new ontologies or whatever that were found remotely or both are created locally. So when the federation loop completes at each scheduled interval, then the ontologies in the local system for that remote host should be identical to the ones that were found remotely, modulo differences in database IDs. So I hope that was all fairly clear. I have just one last slide, which I call recommendations. These are just some thoughts that I had as I was going through this experiment. The first thing is that we've made, you know, quite a few changes to the core, not modifications really, but extensions to add this new service. It would be nice, I think, at some point to be able to commit those changes back to some tagged version in a repository that we all can share. I think that there is room for some operational considerations here that the group might want to pursue in terms of what really Federation should be and what the requirements are for these other aspects that go beyond just the metadata and the views on the metadata in terms of the metrics and the projects and the mapping and those sorts of things. And my inclination is to suggest that the information that is deemed to be appropriate for Federation probably should be available through REST facilities. It seems to have worked out pretty well. I've been running the Federation on our local system from the Sim3 sandbox for a couple of weeks. Right now I have it set up to run every 4 hours, and it seems to be very reliable and solid. So the REST services seem to be a very good way, I think, to do this kind of distribution. And maybe things like mappings and so forth should be put into the OWL model. I did see that there is a mappings.owl, and at least with the tag version that I use, I don't believe that it's actually used by the core. I think it's still used mostly on the user interface model. And that concludes my presentation.
Do we have any quick questions?
Oh.
Okay, we'll allow for a larger Q&A session for all of our presenters.
Right. Yeah, Mike. Yeah, Peter. Yeah, it's kind of difficult to schedule because with everyone muted, so it would actually be easier if we push all the Q&A at the end. And in the meantime, if people have questions, they could log them onto the chat room. That way, your question gets documented, and if the speakers don't get a chance to answer them in real time, they could still look through them later.
Great. Michael?
Okay. I'll give a short little update then on some of the work that we're doing with Glory. On slide 2, just a brief overview or a reminder if people have heard this before. So within our lab, we have in the past year initiated what we're calling Glory, the Common Logic Ontology Repository Project, which was focusing more on ontologies that are specified using common logic. So looking at ontologies that require more expressiveness than OWL or even rules can give. And we also were looking at this as being a testbed for both ontology evaluation, but also kind of ontology integration techniques. So we wanted to have an environment in which people can actually, play with different ontologies as if they were like little building blocks and being able to configure them and test them and understand their relationships. So if we move to slide 3, the idea is that our repository consists of theories or sets of axioms written in Common Logic, and we refer to these theories as modules. That's actually the term that Common Logic uses for kind of using name certain sets of axioms. And so the idea is that the building blocks are these modules, and then a particular ontology then can be a theory that consists of one or more modules. And so the idea is that this is a very kind of modular organization to ontology, and the idea being that the modules are kind of the smallest chunks of axioms that we can refer to, and so that relationships between ontologies can then be defined with respect to the relationships between the different modules that make them up. And so different ontologies can share different modules, and in this way, people can understand their properties a little more easily. If we move to slide 4, the point of slide 4 is that the big thing with Glory is not just the ontologies, but the ontology relationships, the relationships between the ontologies. That's really kind of what we wanted to emphasize to a great extent. And so there are different kinds of relationships that are needed to when you're either doing ontology evaluation or when you're doing kind of ontology mapping and integration. The simplest one is what is known as extension. And so the ability to, you know, be able to say that one ontology extends another kind of reuses the axioms in a part of the most simplest way. And there's two different kinds of extensions. One is in terms of what are called kind of conservative extensions, that you can add them and you're not really changing the axioms at all. And then the other kind of relationship is what's called non-conservative, where you are actually changing, like this is something that's been a little bit of a topic most recently on Ontolog, that you are changing the underlying models of the ontologies, and in a certain sense you are changing the semantics of the relationships there. And so even though you are kind of reusing the axioms in a syntactic sort of way, you are extending it in ways that, you know, maybe the original designer had not really intended. But if we just looked at this kind of extension, we wouldn't gain a lot of insight. Some of the deeper relationships are what's called interpretation, and this is what other most people will refer to when they're talking about ontology mapping. And so the idea is that a particular ontology can actually be powerful enough, to be expressive enough, to provide definitions for terms in the other ontology. And so you can talk about these mappings between ontologies, and the simplest kind of thing is called relative interpretation, where the mapping preserves all the logical consequences. A stronger one is where it not only preserves those consequences, but also preserves preserves satisfiability as well, preserves consistency. And then finally, there's one, the strongest one relationship would be definable equivalence. And so this is a case where two ontologies can have very different sets of axioms, very different sets of what you might call primitives, so very different kinds of relations, and they're actually equivalent. Some of the more powerful examples of this are in geometry. Hilbert's geometry has points, lines, and planes as primitives in some various relations, whereas Tarski's geometry has only points as primitives. And these two ontologies, although they have very different sets of axioms and, again, different primitives, are actually equivalent. Everything you can say in one, you can say in the other. And so this is really kind of one of the big motivations for Clore, is to be able to provide an environment and a framework and architecture where you can not only upload ontologies, but also be able to specify these kinds of relationships. And this actually leads to, on slide 5, I want to get into this too much, but this actually leads to a distinction. There are two different kinds of modules in Clore. One group is called the core theories, which essentially are, I guess what other people might call them, the theories where you are axiomatizing the primitives. And then there are other kinds of modules, which are called definitional extensions, where all the terms in there have just the new definitions. And they're extensions of these other core theories, but they kind of depend on them in the sense that their definitions are written using the language of the core theory. And so we have found that, this is some work that Ali did, that these core theories kind of coalesce into different core hierarchies. And so these are sets of ontologies that all have the same underlying language, but they are providing extensions in different, potentially inconsistent ways. And so this is where this idea of non-conservative extension arises. And so we find these core hierarchies are almost kind of providing, axiomatizing different kind of ontological choices along the way. Now, so moving on to slide 6, we have some of the use cases that we're developing. And the two families, of course, are like, I guess, downloading ontologies and uploading ontologies. But in terms of downloading ontologies, one of the main things that have to happen is module aggregation. So, like I said, the building blocks are modules, and there's common logic has this import relation. And so typically a module is not the entire ontology. It is simply an additional set of axioms, and then through the imports relation of common logic, you can trace down and determine what is the complete set of modules that I need to download when I'm talking about a particular ontology, right? So it's kind of like ontology module configuration, if you will. A second kind of aspect of this would be having translators. So when you download an ontology, you are typically not just downloading it to browse, you're downloading it to do something. And one of the big applications is in terms of being able to do theorem proving. And so one of the things we want to be able to have then are services that implement translators between common logic and the various syntaxes of the different kinds of theorem provers and other constraint engines that people are using. To date, there are no native common logic theorem provers or other kinds of reasoners. And then the third kind of use case related to downloading would be the ability to kind of retrieve ontologies with respect to particular relationships. So you might want to be able to retrieve all the ontologies that are kind of interpretable by one, in a sense, kind of the most generic ontology, or if you wanted to get the weakest ontology, or just all the ontologies that are related to other sets by particular ways. In terms of uploading ontologies, we would want to be able to have the ability to have automatic consistency checkers when people upload ontologies, the ability to specify new relationships in an annotation sort of way, but also to be able to test relationships. So, like I said, the simplest kind of relationship is this relative interpretation that preserves theorems. And so we would want to be able to have a service that could automatically then kind of verify whether, in fact, if somebody said this was an interpretation of another ontology, that it really did preserve the theorems. And so we would want that kind of automatic checking going on in the background. And then finally, the ability to kind of infer new relationships that are implicit in the relationships that are already stated there. There are a few meta-theorems that can be exploited to infer new relationships given what people have already stated or annotated. So then a few applications. On slide 7 is a few of the more theoretical ones. The idea is we want to be able to determine to be able to have enough material in the repository to be able to determine when two ontologies are in fact equivalent, or in fact if one ontology is stronger than another one, and be able to identify those concepts that one ontology can define that the other one cannot. These are very kind of powerful logical properties, and we're hoping that some of the smoke that fills a lot of ontologue discussions can give way to actually the flame underneath, and we can actually determine formally when, again, two ontologies are in fact equivalent, even though they superficially they look very different. On slide 8, there's a few other kinds of applications that have appeared or are going to be appearing in the literature. We have a paper in the upcoming FOIS conference on applying Caloi for ontology verification. I had a paper in the Common Sense Symposium earlier last summer, and Ali and I finished up a paper that kind of shows how to exploit different Caloi relationships to automatically infer SNS mapping. And then Ali and I had a paper in knowledge instruction ontology design conference on how you could use these relationships to actually propose axioms as part of ontology design. Okay, so on slide 9, so right now we have kind of a loose set of web pages. I'll kind of on the final slide, I'll kind of start talking about some of our frustrations at our slow progress. So right now we have probably about 80 different modules, but right now they're just we have an XML markup for the ontologies, and so we wanted to have an actual software environment, but we're kind of behind schedule. So what we're going to be doing in the next week or so is actually putting them up as a set of linked web pages, so at least people can browse these ontologies, even if there are no services available for them. And so right now we have the generic ontologies for time from the catalog of temporal theories, for duration, for different kinds of near topologies, so the study of parthood and connection, a few process ontologies, and an object recognition ontology. And then these are built on top of various ontologies for mathematical structures, And these aren't these mathematical structures aren't there like this, you know, because we're academics. They're actually there because they are the foundation for all of these other kinds of relationships. So that's kind of discussed in our Floyd paper. So the final slide, slide 10, I guess is kind of some of our frustrations. We had really been hoping to use kind of just easily adapt, just plug in our ontologies into OOR or to the BioPortal kind of framework. Unfortunately, it really, you know, the kind of OOR and the other repositories that are kind of extending BioPortal, the current repositories really have a language restriction hardwired in, and we really see no way of kind of changing that without completely redesigning the back end of things like BioPortal. It's kind of in the protege representation language all the way down to the bottom. And so as a result, it's that we can't really, I mean, you know, we wouldn't be able to have the ability to parse any common logic ontology because of that. We have toyed with the idea of having a kind of an ontology of meta-threadic relationships so that the building blocks of Clory are kind of modules in common logic. Well, then we could have a, you know, like an RDF ontology, if you will, of ontologies. But this has always kind of felt like a kludge. Because, you know, then you're not really kind of, the common logic part is kind of one level away. It's almost, you're almost treating the common logic axioms as fancy documentation. And so we really want to be able to have an environment where common logic modules are the things we're manipulating. The other thing is that the Clory is really organized by these meta-threadic relationships between ontologies. Right now, you know, the OOR implementations like BioPortal do not facilitate this to a great extent. Now, this would be something we could possibly extend, but it really does presume that we can have common logic modules as things in the repository. And right now, we're still struggling with how we can actually make get that to work. So that kind of about wraps it up for me.
Thank you very much, Michael. And Ken is on now as well, right? Ken, can you unmute with Star 3?
Yep, I'm online.
Okay.
So, I'm going to talk a little bit about doing it Northeastern. The kind of main thread, I think, in this meeting. We're working on gatekeeping and provenance, but there are things we're doing as well. So if you look at the second slide, slide number two, you see that we're working on the OOR sandbox. We're also developing use cases and other software
Ken, you're fading in and out. So you're fading in and out. So if you could get closer to the microphone or something, it might be helpful.
Does this sound better?
Yeah, much better, yes.
Okay. So I'm going to really run through that again. We've done work with the sandbox installation and administration. We're developing use cases and other software engineering artifacts related to OOR. We're working on gatekeeping of provenance. And I'll try to get some details about that. And we also have some experiences, prototype development, and projects that will be using OOR. So hopefully we'll have more experience in tech about. So we move to slide three, which you mentioned that rear evolving installation, which I believe was talked about earlier, system administration has been done by a couple of ICs in page of three. And so we've been doing that conversion. And we're also going to be developing local OOR. Moving to slide four, since I'm teaching a course on software engineering, I decided to give this as a, well, something related to this as a project for the class. And so in one assignment, they produced over 400 use case scenarios. And so we're now in the process of trying to categorize what they produce. And they came up with all kinds of ideas of things that one could use. The focus, of course, is on the gatekeeping of provenance. So, you know, it would be good to take these scenarios and use cases, and then at the meeting that we're going to have later on, merge it with the very nice use cases that other people have been developing in the meantime. So they also worked, of course, developing use cases from these scenarios, and we're going to be working on these next week. You have a better understanding of what they produced in the first part there. And then they moved on to other engineering, self-engineering artifacts, such as sequence diagrams, data models, subsystem decomposition, and so we're getting some interesting feedback about different possibilities for how the OR could be architected. If you move to slide 5 now, I'll talk about the project that we're doing, where you call it Keeper, which is a term from soccer, and it seems like a good name for it. It's basically gatekeeping and provenance based on some standards that I think were particularly relevant, such as ISO 11079, and the business process execution language, which also seems relevant because gatekeeping involves some business book involves a process whereby the ontologies are reviewed and move up to various levels of registration. So to give you an idea of what's happening now, I have some 12 teams working on this project, all related to this gatekeeping and provenance. Teams run from roughly around four seat stages. And they're also related projects that we have funded, which we've managed to work the OR into these responsibilities that I mentioned. And we have some other projects too that we hope to get funded later on. So there are a whole bunch of possibilities for where this can be used. And it also contributes to it. Now, if you move to slide 6, this is perhaps one of the more interesting things we might want to discuss today, is that one of the student teams had the interesting idea to use Keeper as the basis for their software development. And so they came out with a rather positive attitude toward it. They feel that it actually works quite well as a means of handling their development. Keeper, after all, has all of these, use cases such as submission and review, and they felt that this was perfect for the kinds of things they were doing in their software development project. So that's an interesting thing we might want to discuss, is the possibility of using our own tools within our own development. A couple of prototype systems are being developed in somewhat different directions with respect to Keeper. And hopefully one of those will be available pretty soon to start process of integrating it with VMware Sandbox. And, of course, we're going to have sponsored projects that are going to use at least one of those prototypes in the context of OR. And in slide 7, I just gave a little description of what one of those projects is. It deals with disease knowledge and related to biological taxonomy and also environment and geolocation. So this is going to be a good test bed for the types of things that the OR is supposed to be providing, not just ontologies, but also the curation of these ontologies and the curation of metadata and structured data. Curation is another term for this gatekeeping and quality aspect that Keeper is concerned with. And So in a field like this, and I imagine in many other cases where ontologies and metadata are used for important projects, this would be a good way of testing that the process works and that the and that it fits well with the aims of OOR. One of these aspects is the as I say, is the process. We use the DEEL as a process language, and we have we're developing a kind of hierarchical structure of registrars and stewards or curators, as well as those who submit to the OOR. And all of this involves various levels of various status levels of specified in 1179. But each registrar and each steward can have their own process. So that has to be formalized with the keeper. So that's where we got the idea of using DEL. So I think that pretty much concludes my brief introduction to the things that are going on at Northeastern. During the discussion, perhaps if there are questions, I can give you a little more detail about what we're doing. One thing that came up, I think, in all of the listening was this issue of naming. That was brought up during the Federation. And naming actually is one of the parts of the 1179 standard, and it would seem appropriate that we make use of this standard. There is a standard available for dealing with coming up with naming conventions. So that could also be something that the gatekeeping component could contribute to the OOR. So I guess that's about it. So I guess back to my team.
Hey, thank you very much, Ken.
But I hope you could hear me.
that was great.
Okay.
Thank you. Natasha, are you up? You may still be muted.
Yes, I think I just unmuted myself. Yes.
Great, thank you.
So, I'll talk very briefly since I think we need time for discussion on the plans for VAR portal. So some of the short-term plans that we're planning to implement in the next few months, extensions to extend the commenting facility so that people can use VAR portal as more of a, Unity portal for making suggestion control, just for making new terms. So right now you can create a node, but it's really unstructured, and so we're one of the requirements from our user community is to add more structure to it, to add nodes, specific nodes, for example, for things like some proposals and such. So this is one thing we're pursuing. Another sort of limitation that we're hitting now is the fact that VAR portal right now does not really support instances or individuals in the altar. So we'll add some link of that. In terms of features, a couple of other things are things like the more extensive user profile so that users can, for example, subscribe to receive emails about certain changes, which links to this idea of term proposals and such, because the way the ontology is developed by the medical community, the mailing list for each ontology, and any time there's a request for a change, email gets sent to mailing list. So we want to kind of emulate that so that those communities can use VAR portal for their ontology, community-based, community ontology development. On the architecture side, one of the things that, again, short-term that we're looking at is changing our architecture a little bit so that when the way the ontologies get uploaded, parsed, and
you know, compared to previous versions and so on, like now everything is happening kind of from a single thread, so someone uploads an anthology, and that spring out and trying to parse it and index it, and if there are any problems, it really affects the performance of our blog website, so we're trying to kind of distribute that the way things are happening on the back end, so that there is less of a bottleneck in terms of uploading the code. And then a little bit longer term, things where federation is a big thing for us, so we're really all looking at federations that have actually a bunch of questions on the first presentation. It appears that what our federation is slightly different, but nonetheless, we want to explore different options. Also adding more of the, I would say, semantic web features. So, for example, adding RDFA to the HTML pages that are being returned so that, you know, other semantic web agents can kind of link to pages in PowerPortal and grab information from them more easily. And I think these are probably the main things we're looking at right now. Cool, I'll be sure if I'm forgetting something later. And the thing is, we're pretty certain about what the short-term requirements are, and then we're trying to be very focused on user community. So if other things come up, this list of midterm to longer-term requirements may change. That's it.
Natasha, maybe three, I could ask you a question. Are most of these changes in the core or more in the front-end user interface? Or
Both. So some, there are a number of changes. So the instance handling is in the core because you need REST services for handling instances. Those are also changing in the core because for those who look at the code, you know that nodes right now are on the front end and we're moving them into the back end. So that's also changing the core, so that they're supported, and all the structure is supported by the REST services. But obviously for nodes, there's also some significant number of front-end changes to support the structure. Most of the rest are probably, a federation of this, the core. RDFA is on the front end because they can just take the REST service and convert it to RDFA. So they're kind of all over the place. The distribution of this is the core. So, yeah, anyway.
It seems like things often sort of migrate from the user interface into the core kind of as you get more usage and...
Yes. So things like nodes and mappings, they're in the front end at the beginning just to get them up and running quickly. As we're adding more structure and understanding better how they should look like, they are migrating into the core.
And I know we've talked a little bit about ontologies involving multiple files, which sounds similar to the module mechanism. I assume that view potential could be used for those purposes, although it seems like that's not a perfect way of doing things.
Right. So I think it depends a little bit on what do you expect, how to expect the backend to understand that. I suppose you could do this for that. We haven't really explored that possibility very much right now.
Right, because the views are primarily for alternative representations.
Alternative representation subsets. Subsets is probably more common usage. So that you expect some subsets. Because one of the usages that people are finding, our community really likes is to use PowerPoint ontologies essentially as value sets for, say, filling in forms. And so what happens there is you limit your search to a particular ontology. And if what you really want to do is limit your search to a subset of an ontology, say a particular branch, say anatomy from Snowman, then what you could do is create a view, create a such extensive branch, or the view, and now you can just have a widget that uses only that view there. Okay. Okay, so I'm not quite sure how to best structure the next part of the section, which is really sort of some of the proper management discussion, because I think actually it might make sense maybe to, I thought at this point maybe it makes sense to sort of introduce a little bit of the kind of the current state of affairs and then maybe sort of interweave some of the discussion there with questions about some of the presentations, because I think they might play back and forth with each other. It also sort of makes it easy just in terms of, you know, unmuting everybody and things like that. We made a decision, I guess about a year ago or so, you know, basically to create a ORR branch of BioPortal. So as a, you know, the BioPortal is a terrific foundation for ORR that is really, I've been able to get started and do an awful lot early on. We have branches, I think, for some portions of the BioPortal, but perhaps not others. I think it's probably more the user interface changes, particularly to deal with kind of configuration options, like labeling and things like that. And both of these branches are currently in the Subversion repository at NCBO that we're using. So basically, we can feedback changes to the developers there, but I think it just depends on folks that have commit rights to those repositories. And they've been very basic about updating things and so forth. One of the things that we did for our development of BBM was to basically create our own, and I can kind of find telephone tags to expand to kind of, discuss some of these options, so we may just see those part of the discussion, but we basically snapshotted those repositories and then made our own branch off of those. And seems to have been able to actually pretty easily accommodate changes from Stanford as well and importing those things into merging those essentially with the other changes that need the federation. So one model, I don't know if Stanford really wants to give more people, commit rights to things, and you can, have some control and view of changes. But one option might be to do that same sort of mirroring on an OR specific repository, perhaps using the one that we set up that haven't really used yet on Trello Central. So there might be something for people to think about and other people to comment on in the discussion phase. I guess another question kind of for Natasha. I think some of us have probably registered for BioPortal accounts, but aren't really part of that community. And if there are suggestions on changes to BioPortal, would you like us to go through the BioPortal feedback mechanisms or send things separately to you privately, or what is your preference there?
Probably sending to support at Bioontology. We talked about setting up a mailing list, and I'm sorry, I haven't gotten around to that, but it's supported by Ontology.org goes to most of us here in terms of suggestions.
So you don't mind getting some feedback there from other people, then?
No, not at all. See, we don't promise to act on it right away. We don't have the resources for that, but
so at least in terms of getting ideas, those sort of in the
process. Okay. Peter, you have a suggestion?
Yeah.
I just think that the branch versus a separate repository is more a policy decision rather than a discussion item. While we have probably all the right players here, both from NCBO and from OR, maybe could we come up with a decision and sort of lock it in, at least decide to try such and such an approach and make that decision right now. I mean, we can come back and say that was a bad decision, but at least we come to some sort of decision.
I think that would be good. The thing that I think I'm realizing at this point is that we could probably do, you know, the branches either within a single repository or with a little more complexity, you know, have the same type of branching and merging across different repositories.
Yeah,
and that's kind of a new option that I think we haven't had fully considered earlier.
Right, because I mean, offhand, I mean, I can already see, of course, BioPortal runs a Subversion repository, OOR does, I mean, at SEMweb Central, and now BBN probably has one, and soon enough, I mean, if we don't come up with a decision, then maybe Northeastern will have one, and it will be more difficult to pull things together.
Right. So I guess one proposal that I've had and is that we could use the SEMweb Central repository as a shared OOR repository that has a, you know, essentially maintains the OOR branch off of BioPortal, and but syncs regularly, you know, or at well tight intervals, you know, with BioPortal and you know, merge. Maybe we can actually, you know, sort of write up the process that's involved there, and I think that could potentially be extended to sort of additional tiers, you know, for organizations that want to, you know, work at least initially with sort of private private extensions, you know, within their own user set. So, you know, the other thing is that, you know, as more code changes and modules are, you know, submitted, I think, you know, there probably will be some things that, I expect there will be a lot of things that will go into OOR that may not ultimately go into BioPortal, but, you know, we, at least in terms of federation things that we've done, we would be happy to contribute that directly to BioPortal and have it flow back into OOR as well, if that makes sense. The BioPortal thinks we're interested in doing that. We I'm sorry, I'm a little bit discussion on that was, you know, informed by Jim's presentation today as well. So it seems like there's several models kind of for how codes could migrate between the between the different projects. And ideally we'd like to make it, you know, as easy as possible to do any of that.
So would Natasha or other Stanford folks on this call, does that sound right? Sound okay?
Yeah, I mean, I actually have a whole bunch of questions for Federation. We want to be a little bit careful in integrating code into the core BioPortal. Since we do have active user community, we need to make sure we don't, you know, we need resources to make sure, you know, things don't get messed up, things that we already have don't get messed up. But again, I mean, I asked a bunch of questions in the chat. I didn't get any answers. Hopefully, maybe we can get the answers on the call. I mean, if the Federation is sort of the type of Federation that, as we're going through with the type of Federation that we're thinking of, we're definitely be very interested in integrating that code. In particular, since it sounds like from Jim's presentation that the code that presented is kind of delves more, it's added to the bar portal, so it doesn't actually interfere with any of the current services that exist, which is nice.
And probably I was using that as an early example. I expect there will be other things as well, but
I mean, we have the same issue with the Protege, which is also open source in terms of integrating the code. And that's why we actually did a very kind of plug-in architecture for Protege, so that people can add functionality without that being on the critical path for the tool, or without, you know, having to change anything in the core of the tool. That's not the case with Bar Portal, but and again, we are interested in working with others and trying to integrate the code, but we tend to just, you know, say, just check everything in and we'll let it go.
Right, no. I mean, my thought was really more essentially donating the code to you and having you integrate the course in it, right?
So that would be the way to go. and then it's basically all limited by our resources. But this is Federation is definitely something we're interested in. So would now be a good question to ask some questions on the Federation presentation? Or that I don't know Mike, how you want to
I think it actually probably would be. And then maybe we can come back and discuss a little bit to some of the specific issues in terms of how we might how we want to start the branches moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Because also I personally will have to sign off, but Anisha will stay. Anisha is actually probably the right person to chime in there anyway. So the question that I had one was on the Federation. So I think I missed this point. So do you download just the metadata or the ontologies themselves? And if the latter, do you then parse them and index them and process them?
This is Jim. Yes, if I understand your question, the ontologies and their views that are retrievable, all the information that's retrievable through the web services are used to construct themes locally, and then I do either the update or the create call in the ontology service that's available in the core to record that information. I also implemented my own file handler class, so it does download of the actual file as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also relies on the core service to do whatever it does with that, which typically is to create new directories in the resources directory for that file. I also just employ the usual indexing and parsing services and have those scheduled to run. So the federated ontology and the process through that mechanism, just like everything else.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that certainly answers my question. And so the next one was, right now in your example instance, you federate from the sandbox, right? Or from both sandbox and bar portal?
No, just the sandbox. Just the sandbox.
So
I used the bar portal in the configuration, but I had it disabled because I didn't want to be hitting your instance, you know, unnecessarily and pulling all the stuff from there. So I built another instance on my own where I could, have the federation run every 5 minutes, and on that instance I was creating versions and things like that, and then going and looking at the logs to make sure that they were being pulled and deleted and added appropriately. But generally speaking, right now I'm federating from just the sandbox, and that process is running every 4 hours. And I've been kind of monitoring it, and there's been some activity on the sandbox recently, and it does seem to be keeping things in sync.
That's true, and so the next question that I had was, in particular, if you go into something like Bar Portal, which probably has oncologists that inform us that we don't even want the process, for example. So is there a way right now to consider what to federate? So, for example, to say, you know, from BioPoint, we'll only pull in all oncologists.
No, I thought, you know, it'd be very easy to extend the both the configuration file to say for a particular remote instance, perhaps in the XML configuration declare, you know, I want everything, I only want ontologies that are OWL, I only want ontologies that are these particular IDs. But right now it's doing everything that it sees remotely that is itself not federated. And of course, it's the sandbox because it has federated enough.
And then when you pull them in, do you create your own IDs for them, like version IDs?
Yeah, I have to do right because that's what the core service does. So when I create something locally, I sort the version beans that I retrieve remotely, I sort them by their internal version IDs, and then I create them locally in that order. So it does make an attempt, at least, to keep things in the same order. That could get spaced out, I suppose, if someone at the remote instance used the admin application to delete something explicitly, or whatever, you might miss a version potentially, but typically it needs to be working pretty good in that regard.
And so I don't have to observe the phone call, but I have things. I had one more question, which was, and then I shut off on this. So what happens? So, for example, let's say the sandbox has, gene ontology, and BioPortal has gene ontology. So, when you federate them, they will appear as just two different gene ontologies, right?
They would.
Yeah.
Yes. Right, and the idea, yes, would be that if they really were the same thing, then someone, you know, if we were using federation, then one of them would have appeared as federated. In other words, people wouldn't typically upload the same thing manually, say, to two different systems. They would be recorded as separate ontologies locally, feed by the URL that they came from. So you would have one from Sandbox and you would have one from BioPortal.
Okay. And so when you federate, when you pull things to federate, if you check that something is already federated, right? And if you do you still pull it in or not? So, for example, the
Sandbox
also was federated instance and
federated something from BioPortal. Right. Right now, it is ignoring federated instances that it sees remotely. But from my slide, I think I did indicate that's part of, I think, what we want to develop in terms of use cases, perhaps, other ways to sort of specify operationally what makes sense. I could imagine having two remote instances, say A and B, where B is federating from A, and then I'm federating from both A and B. And the question would be, well, if I see federated instances of B that were federated from A, and I'm also federating from A, which one should I get? And also, I think this idea of having unique global identifiers for these things, as opposed to necessarily just database IDs that auto-increment, might be helpful. So that you really do know that this ontology, wherever you see it, is actually an entity that has unique identifier that represents it uniquely. Even though it may be hosted at three or four different sites, it really is the same thing, potentially, right? That gets a little bit complicated in terms of having BioPortal, you know, enterprises, right, where you would say, okay, you're somewhat doing this with application ID, right? So you say, okay, here's your application ID and here's your range of database identifiers, for example, and that might be helpful to make things a little cleaner right now, when the local system federates something from a remote host, it has to use the core services to create it. And, of course, the ID that it gets assigned is just the next increment. And so, really, a locally federated ontology has two IDs. One is the local system ID, and the other is the ID in the remote system. And that makes things a little bit less clean than it could be potentially. Those have wide-ranging implications, these different kinds of strategies. And so, that those would be things that's up for discussion. But I have thought about the ability to have a configuration option that would handle situations where you're looking at remote hosts that are themselves federated and, issues of transitivity and that sort of thing.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, sorry. Can I have something?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, what happens
to
the federation?
Alex, you have to speak up a lot more to get recorded.
Okay. Is it okay now?
I can hear you.
Right.
Okay, right. So what happens in the federation when I am branching out ontology? For instance, I have an ontology that has several branches. Could I have those branches in different repositories across the federation?
I guess I'm not sure what you mean by branches. You're talking about right now we have ontologies and views on ontologies.
Yeah, for instance, you have sometimes you have situations like in the ontology for biomedical investigations where they have a federal grant. So it's like different ontologies somehow are related to one another. Could these ontologies be seated in different repositories in the federation?
Again, I'm not sure what we mean by branches in this case, but the way the federation works right now for this initial version, local copies of everything are made. So it isn't the case that an ontology is distributed across multiple systems and those systems are aware of each other's ontologies, right? Everything is just copied locally. So I think that's what BioCore would help with. There is no notion of a distributed representation of ontology where different pieces or different branches exist in different systems.
It sounds like this might be the sort of the interaction between a future module mechanism and federation. Particularly having either an ontology with multiple pieces or modeling more directly, imports, relations, and some of the other and the extensions of that Michael presented, between different ontologies or pieces of ontology.
Actually, these imports are kind of what I mean. If you have an ontology that is actually importing something from another ontology, could these other ontologies be also loaded? If that other ontology is moving somewhere in the federation?
I missed a little bit of that, but I think the right now there's no sort of direct support for imports, but in or bio portal, other than I guess on InGest, I'm not even quite sure it's supported there. But I think that in the future I would expect that the different pieces could be distributed throughout the federation hierarchy or graph. Is that consistent with your thoughts, Tim?
Yeah, I think so. I think when the... I'm not quite sure where the importing would occur. I suppose if you uploaded a file and it imported other things, and those things were prepared with URLs that were accessible, that one would have to just automatically go out and pull those artifacts in and record those locally as well. And then in the federation context, you might have options as to whether or not when you federate an ontology, you actually do the same thing and make local copies of everything. So you leave those references just as references. I think the idea of the way parsing and so forth works, so that you can do differences and searches and things like that, is that you really do need to have those triples loaded into the local system in order for that functionality to work properly.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
And that raises some interesting ideas about distributing and making available to services the results of parsing and things like that as well. So I don't know.
Let's see, so we've got a couple, well, like one person on the queue as well, in terms of, as well as some questions that have come up earlier. So Robbie, do you want to ask one of your questions?
Yes, Ken. Mike, is it Mike? I had a couple of questions for Jim. Most of them were really clarified by Natasha's question. The two I had is there any architectural diagram that we can access relating to this? And then you also have this... for Jim, the RDF restriction, like you cannot reach any other ways of defining ontologies unless it is in URLs and RDF.
I think I can answer at least the first question. Todd Steiner has done some architecture diagrams from BioPortal that I believe are still, you know, relatively current and probably the best source that I'm aware of, anyway, of describing those software relationships.
Yeah, I posted a link of that onto the session page here, and I also pointed to that on the chat board under your question, Robbie.
Oh, okay. I will look at that.
Thank you. And I think basically the current, I'll let Jim can confirm, but I believe that for the current federation mechanism, you know, will support any of the current representations of BioPortal does. So I don't know if Jim's actually tried federating, say, an OBO format, but fundamentally I don't see a problem there.
Yeah, I can confirm that. In fact, there's a large number of OBO ontologies in the sandbox now. It looks like someone perhaps has enabled the OBO full service there because we're seeing, you know, essentially all the old familiar, you know, ontologies and things like that. And those are federating just fine as well. So I believe that you can support anything that CloudSort itself requires and implements.
Okay, and then the other question was on the speaker. On ISO restricts you to metadata and metadata registry, where data elements are the central theme. So do we have to define all terms and vocabularies as data in order for us to proceed with speaker usage? And is WSD tell only used for execution of the process of approval and ingest of ontology rather than any internal modification?
Okay. So let me see if I have to try to explain this. ISO 11179 is pretty flexible, and they do they do allow you to test by things like content and relationships. And while it's nominally supposed to be a metadata registry, I don't think it's really that, it's not really restricted to that. You could use it in other ways. I mean, I believe they even say so. So I think there's enough flexibility there that we could basically conform to ISO 11.79 and, still do everything that we want to do with gatekeeping and provenance. But that said, there's still an issue of just exactly what the granularity of an administered item should be for OOR. Should it be something like a module? I mean, exactly what is the smallest unit that you want to go through a review process? And it would seem a little bit extreme to have such a fine granularity that you would review every single triple. On the other hand, if some of these ontologies are really large, reviewing that and all in one step would also seem to be inappropriate. So we need a mechanism for having a kind of a reasonable size for a module so that one can do appropriate process of review on the on those modules. And of course, you need relationships between the modules. That's very important as well if you're going to be breaking up larger ontologies with the smaller modules. Does that explain it to some degree?
Yeah, to some extent. Thank you. And also, I see Peter's links. So thank you, Peter, for that.
If other people have questions that they had posted in the log earlier that they would like to address, I'll have to go ahead and raise your hand on the put yourself on the queue as well. That'll help us identify things that only have Peter?
Yes. I didn't type out this question, but this is an important question, obviously, to Michael. Given your last slide, what is next?
Sir, can you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, given the last slide, so will you be developing a whole Colari ontology repository totally independent of, let's say, the current BioPortal ontology, BioPortal-based ontology repository? Would they share things in common, like, both using OMV to capture metadata? Would they be one day, or at least in the plans, to be able to federate with each other, although I guess all the restrictions that you mentioned would still apply? What are your plans now, given all those frustrations?
Right, yeah, so we really don't want to re-implement anything. And so what we're going to try to do is, first of all, we want to at least get up in this kind of a web-accessible way to put up all of the 80 or so ontologies that we have in Common Logic. So first of all, that makes it very concrete. We can tell people, these are the axioms, the sets of actions that we have. The second thing is to focus on our use cases. So that then in the use case, my first point, we'll kind of raise that at Cassidy's content panel for OOR. And then the second thing is developing the use cases, and that will hopefully feed into the use case telecon for OOR. And then I think what we'll do is try to reassess at that point. I mean, there are a couple ways of getting around it, and I mean, they feel kind of like kludges to me, but if it works, then that's probably the best thing to do. And so, like, the other kind of option would be to have to incorporate this into BioPortal OR style architecture in the sense of having almost like a meta ontology so that the common logic ontologies are basically just treated as kind of concepts, and the relationships between them, the meta-theoretic relations between them get kind of coded as, you know, things like RDF relations. And so they would be in the repository, and then we could start, you know, adding services onto that, such that they would be, the modules of CLORI would be treated very differently from the ontologies that are already in the OOR. And maybe that's what a federated approach means. And so that we might end up doing that. That way we can, you know, leverage off of all the other services that are being developed.
Thank you, Michael.
So the other thing is to kind of focus on the content, so if let people know exactly what the content is, focus on the use cases, and then I say after that use case telecon, we can see how the use cases overlap, and maybe we can come up with a common solution at that point. But yeah, we definitely do not want to have a parallel effort of software development here.
Great. The same sort of same question, but maybe a little more into the metadata that needs to be captured, and I guess to a certain extent relates to gatekeeping and governance. We did during Ontology Summit discussed a minimal set of requirements for gatekeeping, and then we did talk about a little bit on the metadata that needs to be captured. I don't know if anyone ever sort of compared that to what is already in OMV. Would just a subset of OMV already suffice, or do we need to extend on OMV? Also in view of sort of recent work from Aldo Ganjemi on ontology patterns and the help that he is getting from Michael Ushold. So they have also extended a few things on capturing the metadata for an ontology. I guess it would just be nice to, if someone could step up and say they would look into this and let the rest of the team know where we stand on those. So would your team be doing part of that, or would Ken Pokrowski, your team, be looking at part of it, or would the BBN folks be looking at this?
Well, I think so OMV kind of has a very broad set of metadata, which is one of its benefits. I think we would be addressing the relationships between ontologies in that respect. So we wouldn't, I think the material that OMV has...
So your stuff is not even in OMV?
No, I'm just saying that the relationships in CLORI, we would definitely be looking at what OMV can express now and make proposals for how it could be extended.
Mm.
And that would be the extent of the work that we'd be doing, kind of, you know, how good is OMV at capturing some of these relationships. But I think the existing stuff that OMV has with respect to provenance and other things like that, I think would be, you know, best to adopt it, and, you know, as is.
So I would be curious to find out who is going to adopt that and actually convert it into code, essentially.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Actually, we have been looking at OMV, and, you know, we're going to be, you know, using what we can of that in the gatekeeping and provenance area.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, that is something we're looking at.
Wonderful.
It's just that it's somewhat lower priority right now, because we have other things to handle first.
Great. That's all I have. Back to Mike.
Okay, let's see. I may inject an answer that wasn't directly your first question, but I thought you might be interested in possible sort of next steps with respect to Federation, you know, beyond the types of things that Jim outlined. And, I think of the Federation between OOR instances is what I would call a homogeneous Federation, basically where you've got the same representations and essentially the same, or largely the same software base on both sides. And
I think there is a huge opportunity and a lot of even more difficult issues in dealing, figuring out how to deal with heterogeneous federation. So actually linking, say, an instance of, you know, XMDR to OOR or tools like Semantic AD Wiki or Noodle, you know, ontology, collaborative ontology development environment. And so I don't think we have resources really at this point to begin to address those, but those are certainly things that we would like to do. I think there's interesting work to be done there. One, you know, that could possibly be used as an intermediate step to import some of the common logic things to at least map, say, and this is a little bit arbitrary, but unary predicates to classes and binary predicates to properties and import, which has some way of showing that there's a linkage there, and again, to the federation, you know, providing the reference back basically to look at the you know, authoritative sets of
Let's see, Peter, I'm not quite sure how long we actually want to go, given the... Yeah, we sort of started half an hour late, but we are already 2 hours into the session. So I think we better wrap up and save that to the next regular meeting or to the next two community sessions, which I hope everyone who joined us today would come back and because those the content panel, the use cases panel, and maybe later the IPR panel would just be as pertinent to what we're trying to get at.
As far as actions with respect to some of the software configuration management issues, sorry, just one of my other phones or anything. I guess I'll volunteer myself and Dan Sears to kind of look at in a little bit more detail at basically doing branches and merges, you know, across multiple repositories. And see if we can really come up with a robust proposal that matches all the desirable characteristics that we want. So both of us will be out for the next week, but maybe the next telecom, if it's telecom after that, we can report out on that. Any other business or burning topics for today? Okay. Well, thank you very much for our panelists and all of our other participants as well. And as Peter said, we hope you'll joining us for future team telecoms and
okay. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.